Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is going out live on September 22nd at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, but it lives in perpetuity, so who knows when you will ultimately be listening to it. In today's episode, we pose the questions, what does it mean for LGBT couples to finally possess full marriage rights, and why does it matter? I welcome documentarian and filmmaker Rebecca Rice, who in her film We Do, reveals the stories of three LGBT couples, their journeys for legal recognition of their relationships, and the impact that the pursuit of marriage equality has on their lives before and after the Supreme Court ruling on June 26, 2015.
The snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. This is the third of a dozen or more episodes of mine that are focusing on filmmakers. They probably have many things in common, but this particular group of filmmakers has one particular thing in common. Their films were all selected for the 2015 edition of Cinema Diverse, the LGBTQ film festival in Palm Springs. Actually, let's say that it's actually Cinema Diverse, the Palm Springs LGBTQ film festival. Rebecca Rice is an award-winning independent filmmaker whose projects include Stealing Home, which is a feature produced in 1995, winner of three festival awards; Filmmaker, which is a feature produced in 1999 and a selection of the Cannes Forum; Segregated Sunday, a documentary short produced in 2000, joined The Food Chain, a public service announcement produced in 2004, which received the Gracie Award and was an Emmy nominee. Wanda the Wonderful, a documentary feature produced in 2014. We Need to Talk About Alec, documentary short produced in 2014. And We Do, a documentary feature produced in 2015. I just saw it, and that's what Rebecca's coming on the air to discuss. Additionally, Rebecca has written and produced corporate programming for businesses and cable television. Her projects have featured the celebrity talents of Terry Bradshaw, Linda Gray, Peggy Fleming, Robert Wagner, Cheryl Ladd, Sharon Gless, and Pat Summerall. Rebecca holds a Master of Fine Arts in Broadcast Film from Southern Methodist University. And with me to tell me more about her fabulous adventures, Rebecca Rice. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Nicholas. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
I was not able to see your film with an audience at this past weekend's festival, but I have watched the film thanks to you connecting me to your private online screener for media people like me. I wish I had seen it with the audience because it's always great to see a film with an audience instead of by yourself. But congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really an honor to be part of Cinema Diverse. Palm Springs is a great community, and it was just such a joy to be there.
So at what point did you decide you wanted to take on this topic with this documentary?
That's a great question. And that really happened in February of 2014. To back up just a little bit, my partner and I live in Texas. And honestly, we never thought we would see marriage equality in Texas. We thought we would just see, you know, one state at a time continuing to creep toward marriage equality. But the Deep South is a different world than California or New York and a lot of places. And we never thought we'd see it here. But in February of 2014, a federal judge in San Antonio ruled Texas DOMA law to be unconstitutional. And I looked at my partner and I said, oh my God, we're going to have marriage equality in Texas. And neither one of us could believe it. But we knew it was coming. It was inevitable after that court decision. And the judge immediately stayed his decision, and it was immediately, of course, appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court. And it sat there and it sat there and it sat there until finally the Supreme Court ruled. But back to the story of how I was inspired to make this film. When that judge declared Texas DOMA law unconstitutional, I really felt like I needed to do something as a filmmaker. And I felt that this period of history between the civil unions and then the first state authorizing marriage licenses to our couples, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender couples, Massachusetts in 2004, between that period of time and when the Supreme Court finally made it fully legal for every state in the union for marriage equality, I wanted to save that history and have a piece of that to remember. And I felt that there were, you know, stories of couples who worked so hard to legalize their unions during that period of time. Many had to travel out of state to get a legal union. They do a, you know, they do a civil ceremony or just a private family ceremony in their state, and then they'd have to go to New York or California or Massachusetts or somewhere to make their unions legal. And I just really felt compelled to save some of these stories because I truly believe, and I'm old enough to remember this from seeing history unfold before my eyes in my younger years, I know that people will forget. And our younger generation of gays, gays and lesbians, will forget all of the work and the fight that went in to making marriage equality happen. So I got really busy and I started contacting people. And I started with a young couple that I had known for a while, Marielle and Viviana Beluja. They live in Austin, Texas. And I knew that, you know, I knew a bit of their story, but I didn't know all of their story. I didn't know the challenges that they had faced when they did just, you know, their wedding ceremony in Austin for their families.
And so I started with them, and they came over to our house, and they sat down one Sunday afternoon, and they just started to tell me their story. And it was just so compelling. And I mean, it was kind of, it was heartbreaking. There were parts of the story that were heartbreaking. And this is a young couple in their mid-20s and early 30s. And you would think that the younger our couples are, the happier their stories are going to be. But when it comes to our families, it's not necessarily so. So when they just opened up their hearts and told this compelling story, and I had the camera rolling and I was recording it, I realized that I just had to keep on going. So I sought out some other couples. I talked to a lot of people, many of whom were not really comfortable being on camera. But through trial and error, I found two other couples who had really great stories, too. And one of them was a male couple, Michael and Michael, who'd been together since 2001. And they did a civil union in Vermont in 2002 because that was the only thing available to them at the time. And they just waited. They told me their story. They were waiting to get married in their home state of Texas. That was their goal. And I'm very happy to say that, though this is a little snippet of this is included in the film, on July 31st of this year, they were married on the 13th anniversary of their holy union. And they had the wedding in their backyard, and my partner and I were able to attend, and it was just really a beautiful conclusion to their story being together for 14 years.
How beautiful. Tell us about the third couple.
The third couple are kind of a really extraordinary story, and I guess we wish we all had their story. Lita and Ann live in Denver. They've been together for 2 years, and I think today is actually their second anniversary. They were just posting that on Facebook earlier today. And they met, and they, you know, got together pretty quickly. And as lesbians do, they bought a house before they got married. So, you know how we are.
I was surprised that your documentary had no clips of the U-Haul.
I know, we really should, because it's, you know, it's so typical of us. My partner and I basically did the same thing. We got together pretty quickly and bought a house together quickly, just as Lita and Ann did. So when they decided to get married, civil unions was the law in Colorado. So they did a big family wedding, and they were very fortunate that they had support from both sides of their family. And in fact, Lita, a little side note, Lita has two brothers who are also gay, and one of her brothers lives in San Francisco. So after they did the family wedding in Colorado, they flew out to San Francisco, went to City Hall, which is a big deal, you know, for all of us and for San Francisco. And they did their legal wedding there in a very small ceremony with her brother and a couple of friends. And
her brother became an officiant for one day only.
One day only. It was awesome. So he could officiate his sister's wedding. It's really cool. And they have a son, Jackson, his Lita's biological son from a previous relationship. And when I talked to Lita and Ann on the phone, and I was asking them if, you know, if they would do this, and actually Lita had gone to high school with my partner, Rose, and I had talked to several other couples. I had a couple in New York, a female couple that wanted to do the interview, but they were so busy and we just couldn't get our schedules together. So one day Rose was looking at Facebook and she said, "Oh, you've got to see these beautiful pictures from Lita and Ann's wedding. And you really ought to call them because they're, I know Lita, I don't know Ann, but Lita's a really neat person and I think she'd be really good." And I called them up and told them the film I was making and what I wanted to do. And they said, "Yes, we'd love to. And our son Jackson wants to be in the film too. He wanted to be interviewed." And you've seen the film, so you know how amazing he is. And he's just so evolved, and he's probably 11 by now. I think he was 10 when he did the interview, but he's just an amazing young man. And the beautiful thing about their situation is that they do have complete support from both Lita's family and Ann's family, and we all know how rare that is. We all wish we had that. But it was nice to include that as, you know, kind of a vision of the future that I think eventually we're going to be there where, you know, we're working through all of this, all of our history and being discriminated against and our families, you know, not always accepting us. And it was nice to see that some of us are getting there and getting our families complete support.
I couldn't have said that better. In a couple of minutes, the conversation with Rebecca continues, and we're going to delve more into some of the surprising similarities and differences between the couples that she features in her documentary.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at revivalstores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
I'm back in my conversation with Rebecca Rice. We're talking about her new documentary, We Do, which reveals the stories of three LGBT couples, their journeys for legal recognition of their relationships, and the impact that the pursuit of marriage equality has had on their lives before and after the Supreme Court ruling on June 26, 2015. Rebecca, one of the points that you made in the first portion of the interview that I would concur with is I think people would have an expectation that it is the young couples that would have an easier, softer way in terms of marrying one another and having the love and support of their family. But we see that that was not the case for, is it Morrell?
Marielle and Viviana.
It wasn't the case for them.
No, it's ironic, isn't it? You would hope that we would be moving in a positive direction. And I think part of it is also that they are both Hispanic. Mariel's family is mostly from Mexico, and of course, their both families are Catholic. So there's a lot of long-standing tradition and expectations of young people growing up in that culture. And I think Mariel talks about that quite a bit in the documentary.
What I wished for them, having seen the documentary, is that, you know, they spent a lot of money on a formal wedding and invited the whole family, and some of the family came and treated it as a funeral, and then they went away for a week in New York, but because they had spent all this money on their wedding, they could only stay in a hotel for one night during their trip. And I wish that they had not had their wedding ceremony and had given themselves a whole great week in New York. That's what I wanted for them.
Yeah, I know. And I think they were surprised by how the wedding in Austin went down with their families. I think they were caught by surprise too. And I think, you know, if they had an inkling of how it would have turned out, they might have made that same decision for themselves. It's interesting,
you know,
the whole tone of how they're talking when they talk about the wedding in Austin. It's like there's kind of a dark cloud hanging over them when they're talking about it. But then when they talk about New York, their countenance completely changes. And clearly it was like a 180 experience for them being in New York.
Was it, when you're looking at the screen, is it Marielle who's on the left and Viviana on the right?
Yes.
Oh, when Viviana on several occasions says to Marielle, "Don't look at me," because she knows that if they keep gazing in each other's eyes, they'll cry.
Exactly.
I loved that. Yeah, I loved them. I want to like hang out and there be their new BFFs.
I know, they're an amazing couple. They're just, and that was one of the reasons why I started with them, because I knew that in spite of being really young, they're very mature and they're very connected and committed and dedicated to each other. And, you know, they have the souls of old people. They may be young in chronology, but they are old souls and just very wise and deep thinking. And yeah, they did keep looking at each other and said, "Don't look at me," because at the very end, they both do get emotional about kind of the fact that they are married and they're so, you know, we're all so lucky to be here. And it's amazing.
I don't want to give away everything I know about the documentary, but Lita and Anne, at least when your documentary is being made, reveal that they're having another child. And I was wondering, would that baby have been born yet, or is that pregnancy still ongoing?
The baby Apollo was born, I think it was the first weekend of August. So he's a few weeks old now, and Jackson is loving being a big brother.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love the name Apollo as well. I want to say, even though I was very endeared to Marielle and Viviana, I loved all of the couples, Michael and Michael and Lita and Anne, and appreciate their willingness to tell their stories. You mentioned that you contacted a lot of different couples, who many of whom did not want to be on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've been living in California with some exceptions. Since elsewhere, but basically most of my adult life I've been a Californian. And although I cut my activist teeth in Arizona when I was in my early 20s, so I know what it's like to live in that sort of state, which seemingly has even gotten much more conservative, Arizona.
Yes.
But what were some of the immediate concerns of the people that did not want to be on camera? Are they in careers in which they could lose their jobs? Do you happen to know some specific examples of why some of the couples chose not to participate?
You know, I really don't know. When those who didn't want to be in the documentary really just didn't follow up with me, there was an initial interest and they just kind of didn't go there. So it may be a combination of being concerned about their jobs or even just being concerned about telling their story to, you know, potentially hundreds or thousands of people who might be watching this thing and, you know, people seeing them on the internet. So I don't really know, but that's a great question.
Well, I think it's important, even though we don't know the precise answer in this situation, I do think that it is very important to point out that in the absence of laws that protect discrimination against LGBT people in the workplace, we have I think over 30 states where people can still be fired for being LGBT. I might be wrong on the number, but there are a significant number of states where people can still be fired for simply being a member of the LGBT community.
Exactly. And as the saying goes, you get married on a Sunday, you could get fired on a Monday, because what's the first thing that happens after you get married? You go to your job, you go to the HR department, you change your status. So, you know, you have to make sure your beneficiary is your partner or by this time your spouse. and your insurance is all lined up, and you know, it's not always a friendly environment when you walk into that HR office. You just don't always know. It is scary. We still have a lot of work to do in that regard.
Yes, and people that want more specific information about that can look up Employment Non-Discrimination Act online. Have you had the opportunity to be in screenings of your film with an audience yet?
Yes.
And tell me about those screenings, where they happened and what it was like. Tell me about the first one where you were first able to experience your film with an audience that was not predisposed to love you and the film.
Well, the first screening that we did the weekend, the Saturday before the Supreme Court ruling. And we did it at Cathedral of Hope. It was a community preview screening. It preceded the film festival screenings and all of that. And so it was at Cathedral of Hope, which is, I believe it's the largest LGBT church in the country. And it was, we had a great crowd, and it was an amazing screening. And the feedback and the comments and the were just so amazing. And Mary Ellen Viviana had driven up from Austin to be there. And I remember one of the audience members said to them, he said, "Thank you for sharing your story in this film, because you have no idea how many young people may see this film who need to see it. Because, you know, our youth are often very much in trouble, and they need to know that it's going to be okay and that they're okay." And I was really moved by that comment, and so were Mariel and Viviana. I don't think they'd really thought about, you know, that them telling their story was going to have an impact on some young person who needed to hear it, needed to hear that, look, you can potentially, you know, grow up, get married, have a family, have a house, have a life, and have a future. And be happy.
And you can decide in advance perhaps not to spend your savings on a wedding and instead spend it on your own honeymoon.
Exactly. Just go to New York and have a great old time.
You know what I wish they would teach us in school? I wish that it would be part of education throughout our formal educational years all the way into college, that your true family and your biological mm-hmm. family may or may not be the same.
That is so true.
Because we live in a world that where there is such expectation about what a family is or supposed to be and what it's going to mean in your life and in your future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also think that part of the lesson should be teaching us everything we can do to create a reality where our true family and our biological family are the same.
Yes.
But You had also mentioned tradition. You were talking about Marielle and Viviana and the fact that they're Latinas from that more conservative heritage, and that there's a tradition. Well, you know, the same tradition is pervasive through weddings in general.
Yes.
And I just love it. Another point that your documentary makes that I love is that I frankly think that the divorce rate will be far lower among same-sex couples than it is among the broader community, because we've had to fight so hard for this right. And the other
yes.
point that was made in your documentary is that when LGBT individuals decide to become parents, it's very rarely by mistake. It's
uh-huh.
generally quite intentional.
Yes.
And so there are not many unwanted marriages and unwanted children among LGBT families.
Right. And as Reverend Jim Matulski says in the introduction to the interviews, he put it so well. He said, "I hope that we will change marriage and make it a better institution." That's so powerful, and I really think we have that opportunity, because we haven't had the benefit of taking marriage for granted, as sometimes straight couples tend to do, or straight society tends to do.
certainly. When our conversation continues, I'm going to ask Rebecca to tell me about what's up for her and what some key influences have been on her life as we've collectively, as a community, really created a new world.
The snowstorm continues after this.
In Greater Palm Springs, since 1979, the Desert Business Association has promoted and supported LGBT and allied businesses and professionals who join together for business promotion, economic development, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Their vision is to connect, promote, and build prosperity by embracing all members of the community to make a positive difference. They have many events every month. Find them at desertbusinessassociation.com.
Rebecca, in the documentary, one of the things that struck me is that when Marielle and Viviana are in the inner city, they're very much comfortable being themselves, walking mm-hmm. around, holding hands. But when they're in their own suburban neighborhood, it's a very different experience. Mm-hmm. What city are you in?
I'm in Dallas. I'm in a suburb of Dallas called Richardson, Texas.
So do you have, is there anywhere in Dallas where you would feel comfortable walking around holding your partner's hand?
In the neighborhood, down in the Oaklawn, Cedar Springs area, or we have an area called Bishop Arts, which is a real hip, cool area and also gay friendly. But, you know, in Richardson, it can be hit and miss. You know, our neighbors are great. They all are very supportive of us. And people have said, we're just glad you're here, which is really neat. But, you know, in our neighborhood, we still kind of keep it a little cool because you just don't know, you know. And Marielle and Viviana brought up some really compelling things in their conversation on camera that, you know, we still deal with that. You know, am I in a safe place where I can be physically, you know, hold hands with my partner and be, you know, out and present with my partner? And we always have to think about that. It was a joy to be in Palm Springs because I got that vibe in Palm Springs. Like, it's okay to be yourself here. And that's, you know, I think we don't realize until we're in an environment like that how often we have to keep our guard up, just being ourselves or being with our partners or just, you know, anywhere.
Well, you know, my audience is worldwide. I'm based in Palm Springs, but the impact of me having a rainbow flag on my car is that someone's probably going to speed up mm-hmm. to look through my tinted windows to see if they want to ask mm-hmm. me out. But in your case, you know, I imagine that you live in a part of the world where you might wonder, well, could my car be vandalized because there's a rainbow flag on it?
Well, since you bring it up, though I don't have a rainbow flag on my car, I have an HRC sticker on the back of my car. And my car has been vandalized twice in the North Dallas area. You know, once we were out doing some shopping and I came back to find that somebody had keyed a cross in the driver's side door of my car.
And then That's very Christian.
I know, totally. And then about a year and a half later, and this is just a few months ago, we came out of CVS and we were only in there a few minutes, but somebody had taken one of those giant Sharpies, you know, the ones that have like mark an inch wide, and marked through the equality sticker as if to say, you're not equal. Don't even think about it. It was kind of just really distressing. But, you know, Rose looked at it and said, we can get that off of there with a little bit of alcohol. But, you know, it's a little creepy just knowing that somebody's out there doing that sort of thing and making sure that you know that you're not approved of just walking around and you're doing, you know, shopping and doing things that you normally do in a life.
Just now, clearly what you experienced is far from what someone that is a victim of physical assault experiences.
Yes.
But still, did you feel like you were gut punched when that happened to you on an emotional level?
I did. I did, because I felt like, you know, oh, there's somebody out there and they're judging us. And they don't, you know, they're making the assumption that either we're gay or we're a gay ally, but it doesn't really matter because they're taking physical measures to say, you are not equal to the rest of us and you don't deserve to be part of the overall culture. But I know what you're talking about, because in the film, Michael Robinson and Michael Sarecchia are the male couple, and they're my age. They're a little older, and they've lived through different times than these. And Michael Sarecchia says he came out in 1969, the same year as Stonewall, and he was.
And that's an amazing photo of him from that age,
yeah,
as well.
That's his headshot. He was an actor, a performer back then, and he performed on Broadway in the original. Well, he was on Broadway. I'm blanking out on the name of the show right now. I shouldn't. I should have it.
A gay man was on Broadway. I am so shocked.
Shocked. But yeah, and he talks about his nephew who's living with them, and how, you know, he takes for granted a lot of things that are going on now, and that, you know, the time that he had lived through, that Michael had lived through, his nephew's experiencing a lot of beneficial things on the scars on our backs from those who, you know, fought the fight long ago. And he does allude to getting the crap beat out of him. So you just don't know. I've not asked Michael if that happened to him, but, you know, surely in those days, back in the Stonewall era and being in New York, it's highly likely that, you know, he or someone he knew or anybody, it happened a lot. And in fact, there was a documentary at the Austin Gay and Lesbian Film Festival about an episode that happened just a year or two ago, where the police raided a gay bar and beat up a bunch of people. And, you know, so we're not past that yet, unfortunately.
We certainly aren't. We've talked about the broader culture, and we've talked about your film and the couples in it. I'd love to talk a little bit about you. Where did you grow up, and what was your coming out experience like?
Oh, two great questions. I grew up, I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And in Albuquerque, white people are the minority, you know, surrounded by Hispanics and Native Americans, which I thought, you know, that's what the world looked like. And then we moved to Dallas, and it was completely different. Like, why are just white people here? This is so boring. But it took me a long time to come out. You know, I went to college in the early 70s, back when we were mentally ill. You know, that didn't change until the American Psychiatric Association changed that in 1974. And, you know, it was, in my mind, I think it was a lot easier to just try to fit into the overall culture than to be gay. And I struggled with it for a long time. I tried dating men for a long time. I almost got married a time or two. And it wasn't really until 2001 that I finally came out. And some of that had to do with my family, my mom in particular. As it turns out, my dad was very supportive when I did come out. And we just never discussed it with my mom because I knew how that conversation would go. Once I did come out, though, you know, I just really, for the first time, felt like a whole person. And it scared me for so long to come out, but when I finally did, it was a relief. And my friends will tell you that I outed myself to everybody like in rapid fire. It's like, oh, it took me this long. I'm not going to waste any more time. So, you know, I told this friend and that friend and that friend and told my dad, and all of that transpired, like, you know, within about just a few months. Is I just wanted to get on with it, and I felt good. And it's like, wow, I just feel so much better just to be myself and not have to keep hiding. That was a struggle, but
it's fascinating to know that you came out in 2001 and that you've mm-hmm. already participated at the level that you have as an out activist.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, yeah, I do feel, I think growing up in the 60s too, I always felt committed to social change. you can't grow up and watch. I was really too young in the 60s to participate in the civil rights or the anti-war movement or all of that. And then the emerging gay rights movement, which happened, really in the early 70s, primarily after Stonewall in 69. But I think I felt like I've waited so long and I've just held myself back. Like, let's go. Stop wasting time. Just be who you are and make a contribution and, be part of the community. And it feels good.
Well, my personal mission statement and what I try to inspire in others through my work is to honor and express my creativity in a way that makes a difference. And I like to inspire people to identify and follow their dreams. And and if they don't have the self-esteem to know that it's okay for them to even have dreams and pursue them, then I like to start at that level. We only have one life that we are certain of, and I like to see people live it in a full and happy and fulfilling way.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Is there anything you would like to add that we haven't talked about?
Michael Sarecchia was in A Chorus Line.
on Broadway. Of course. And you know what? Cast. If he was in the original cast of A Chorus Line, I think that he might own a piece of it. I don't know that for a fact, but I think that the original cast, they workshopped the show together and therefore had writer's credits. I might be wrong.
Wow.
But
wow,
that's
cool.
Pretty fantastic to have been in that show.
He still has his hat. He has it on display at his home, the top hat.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on my show. Now, this podcast links to We Do on imdb.com. And it also links to Rebecca Rice on imdb.com. Are there any other websites or Facebook pages or anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, yes. We have a We Do-documentary group page on Facebook. Would love to invite everyone to check that out and come join us on that page. I'll be posting updates regarding the film, future screenings, distribution as we get that worked out. It is We Do-documentary public group. Please join us.
And if you just search Facebook in the little Facebook search box, We Do Documentary, We Do is two words. Yes. You don't even have to know where to put the dash. You'll find the group. Fantastic. Well, I'm really thrilled that you took the time to be on the show. This show will exist in perpetuity, so you can share it when and however you would like. And
great.
And please contact me when you're promoting your next project.
I will do. Thank you so much, Nicholas. It's been a pleasure being with you.
It's been my pleasure having you. Thank you. I've been speaking with Rebecca Rice, an award-winning independent filmmaker. I admire her for her courage. And, I had the opportunity to be on staff for the first ever National Coming Out Day in 1988. And the motto of National Coming Out Day then and now is take your next step. So whoever you are, whatever you might be keeping inside, take your next step in being yourself and living your life.
We are, in fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google+, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.